So the Mishnah on Kuf Yud Gimel talks about Ksharim, the Malacha of Kosher, of tying knots, which is the subject of this Perek. And we'll learn the Mishnah. There are two Mishnayos on this Amud. We'll see what we can accomplish. And we'll start with the first of the two. Kosherin Dli Bipsikta, Bipsikya. So we have a pail. We have a pail, and every pail has to be attached to a bar. And after you tie down the dli to the bar with some sort of a belt or a strap, then you can draw the water from the bar, from this well, by pulling up the dli, which is tied down to the bar. Now the question is, when he ties down this psikya to the bar, is he doing it on a permanent basis? And that's where the Mishnah differentiates between psikya and avalo bechevel. Chevel, which is a rope, is something that you tie down on a permanent basis. So when he makes the knot and he attaches the chevel, he uses the chevel to attach the dli to the bar, then that's a permanent basis, and that's for sure asur. But psikya, which is a kind of a temporary setup, it's not permanent, and we said before it was like a kind of a belt that ties the pail down, that's something that he intends to untie. I'm not sure exactly when, but let's say within a reasonable amount of time. So it's not a permanent attachment, and the knot will not become permanent, and that's fine. But in the case of a rope, if you tie a knot on the rope, that's permanent. Then it says, Rabbi Yehuda Matir. Now, what does it mean, Rabbi Yehuda Matir? He's talking about a chevel. He's talking about a rope. Now, in the case of a rope, in all likelihood, he's tying a knot on a permanent basis. So we have to figure out why and how Rabbi Yehuda could allow that. And then the Mishnah adds kind of like a postscript, and that is, Klal Omer Rabbi Yehuda Kol Kesha Sheina Shel Kayoma Ein Chayovin Aleha. That if it's not a permanent knot, then you're not liable for that. Now, is this a comment that Rabbi Yehuda is attaching to our Mishnah? Maybe he's explaining why in the case of a rope, he is mekil, and he allows it. Maybe it's not a kesher shel kayoma. So that would mean that he's tying it in a very temporary kind of way. It's not a real knot. However, there are Rishonim who say that this last klal of Rabbi Yehuda has nothing to do with our machlokes about tying down a chevel, but this rather goes back to an earlier Mishnah, back on Daf Kuf Yud Aleph. Rabbi Meir says that it all depends upon whether you can take apart the knot with one hand. If you can, then according to Rabbi Meir, that's called a temporary knot. And it could be that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that that's not true, and that it depends whether the knot is permanent or not permanent, and exactly how Rabbi Yehuda, you know, would determine whether it's permanent or not permanent, it might depend more on his intention so that even if the knot, you know, you would require two hands to take apart the knot, which according to Rabbi Meir would mean that it's called a kesher and yechayev. Rabbi Yehuda said would say no, because in your mind it's not a kesher shel kayom. But in general, I think what we have to, just as a sort of introduction, a sketch, is we have to say that there are always going to be two elements involved in a kesher. One is what I call in Reb Chaim's terminology the gavra. What is your intention? Do you want it to be permanent, or are you going to take it apart? And the second is the cheftza, the knot itself. You know, would the knot, if left alone, be apparently or obviously a permanent knot the way you tie it? So those are going to be the two factors. Okay. So now the Gemara is going to ask a question here about the chevel, about the rope, that hopefully will give us an insight into the debate here between the Chachamim and Rabbi Yehuda. Chevel demai. In other words, what's the nature of this rope? Ilema chevel di alma. If you're talking about a regular rope, then how is it possible that Rabbi Yehuda is matir, kesher shel kayomahu? In the case of a regular rope, that's exactly how you tie down a pail to a body of water, to a well. So that should be a classic case of a chevel and a kesher shel kayomah. How could Rabbi Yehuda be matir? Ella, we have no choice but to reinterpret the Mishnah, and this is a special kind of chevel, which is going to be a temporary replacement for a normal, sturdy, healthy rope, and that's chevel de gardi. So we're talking about a weaver's rope, and he writes here, chevel shel uman ha'oreg biyadayim. Right, they had manual weaving looms, and they used a certain kind of a chevel. And he writes, "Hu chevel miyuchad." It's a very special chevel, and it's used by a professional weaver. So obviously, he's only using it as a temporary replacement. He needs that rope. It's a very specialized and professional kind of rope, which he needs for his profession. So he's not going to leave it there forever and ever. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda is matir. Now, if this be the case, then now we're stuck on the other end, right? It's like a tennis, you know, ping pong. It goes from one side of the net to the other. Now we have to figure out the Rabbanon. Obviously, if it's a weaver's rope, it's a chevel de gardi, then he's not leaving it there on a permanent basis. So we're going to have to assume here that the Rabbanon are instituting a gzeirah. And what they're saying is that, you know what, you're using a rope, you personally need that rope for your profession, and therefore it's you're tying a temporary knot, but truth be told, it's a very good rope, and it's, you know, it's being tied down in a way that seems permanent. But the Rabbanan are afraid that if we allow you to use this kind of a temporary rope with a temporary knot, then, you know, we're opening the floodgates, so to speak. We're getting into a very problematic area. Right. It reminds me in contemporary life here in Israel, you know, because we had a very strong heat wave a week ago, we call it a sharav, so they allowed you to go out without the masks. And now, nobody wants to wear masks anymore, because everybody got used to not wearing masks. So if we tell a person, yeah, you could tie the knot and just use the weaver's rope, you know, tomorrow he's not going to remember that he has to use, that he has to use a weaver's rope. He's going to think, oh, you know, I can use any rope. You know, you've already opened up the floodgates. He's not going to make these distinctions. He's lemeimar, should we assume, Rabbanan Savri, Chevel Gazrinan, Chevel de Gardi, Otu Chevel de Alma. the Chachamim understood that we have to enact a fence around the Torah, and we're going to have to prevent you and prohibit you from using the weaver's rope, because otherwise tomorrow you'll use a regular rope, and then you'll violate a Malacha Doraisa with a Chiyuv Chatos of kosher. And on the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Savar Lo Gazrinan. Rabbi Yehuda feels that these are two different types of ropes, and if we instruct you and warn you with a strong regulation, a strong stipulation that you're only allowed to use a temporary kind of setup here, you'll understand that you don't go beyond that. A Jew knows about the malach of kosher, and he would never violate it by tying it down on a permanent basis. For a minu, we're going to ask a question now from a brisa, and this brisa is going to flip everything around in the opposite direction, and Rabbi Yehuda is dafka going to be the machmir, and the chachamim are going to be more lenient. Chevel dlisha nifsak. What happened is that your rope ripped, and now you have a rope that's made up of two halves, right? It's split down the middle, and he wants to fix it. Lo yehei koshro ela onvo. The chachamim are lenient, and they say, although you're not allowed to tie a knot to put the two halves together, that would be a malacha d'oraisa of kosher, but you're allowed to make a bow. So you can take the two ends where it ripped and tie it, one under the other, and then make two loops and make a bow out of it. That's called aniva. And aniva, according to this brisa in the Chachamim Shita, is a different kind of a knot. And by its very nature, it's a temporary kind of a knot. And we're not afraid that if we allow him to make this kind of temporary knot, which is different, it's an aniva, it's a bow, that he'll come tomorrow, or I shouldn't say tomorrow, maybe next Shabbos, and he'll tie a permanent knot. These are two very easily distinguishable different kinds of knots. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Korech Alafunda. Rabbi Yehuda is not going to allow you to make a bow. The best he would allow you is to sort of take the two ends that ripped and wrap them around with some sort of we'll call it a belt, and maybe the belt has an opening inside of it, like it's got a little bit of a space, and you can somehow place the two parts of the rope inside the belt, inside this opening in the belt, and that's a whole different type of a way of keeping the two severed parts of the rope together. Ubilvad shaloyan venu. But I'm not going to let you, says Rabbi Yehuda, make a bow. So the Gemara says, Kasha the Rabbi Yehuda, Kasha the Rabbanon. We have a double contradiction here, two problems here. On the one hand, we have a contradiction between one statement of Rabbi Yehuda and the other. Rabbi Yehuda in our Mishnah, in the case of the weaver's rope, is not afraid that if we allow you to use a weaver's rope, you might come to use a regular rope. On the other hand, in the case of Aniva, he's not going to allow you to do the Aniva, to do the tie the bow, because he's afraid that tomorrow you'll do a knot. Kasha the Rabbanon, we have a stira within the Rabbanon Shita, because on the one hand, the Rabbanon Mishnah instituted a gzeira. They were afraid that if we allow you to use a kesher, a chevel shel gardi, the weaver's rope, then next Shabbos you'll use a regular rope. But here in the case of Aniva, they don't seem to be concerned about it. They're going to allow you to make this bow, and they're not afraid that next week you'll make a regular knot. So the Gemara starts by reconciling these two opinions of the Rabbanon in our Mishnah and the Rabbanon in the Braisa. The Rabbanon lo kasha. Chevel bechevel michlaf, aniva bekshira lo michlaf. If we're talking about the same identical type or category of knots, just the difference whether or not it's a rope that you use classically, you know, you buy it for $10 as opposed to a weaver's rope that you paid $50, that's already michlaf. That's already reason to get very suspicious that he'll make that change. But if the difference is not in the rope, but in the knot itself, then there's a whole new category of a knot, which is called a bow. It's really not a knot at all. It's not a knot. That's a double negative. Right? It's a bow.
Yeah.
And we're not afraid that he's going to make that distinction. Like, for example, let's say your shoes. If you have laces on your shoes, now it's very popular to, they're going back to when it was popular in my childhood, loafers, you know, which don't have even laces. But let's say you have the old classic kind of old-fashioned shoe that has laces on it. Then if I tell you, look, you're allowed to tie on Shabbos, you're allowed to tie your shoes with a bow, but don't tie it with a knot, I think you'll understand that that's the way to do it. But in the case of a different kind of a rope, you know, this rope sells for this, so this rope is a little bit more sophisticated. So that's a great fear. That's a gzera. That if we allow you one rope, you'll end up using another rope. The Rabbi Yehuda lo kasha. We could also perhaps reconcile Rabbi Yehuda. Hasam, we're in the case of the Braisa where Rabbi Yehuda gets very tight, you know, he's very strict about Aniva, and he won't allow you in the case of a Delisha Nifsak to tie the two halves that ripped with a bow. Mishum Hasam Lo Mishum de Michlafa Aniva Bikshira. Don't misunderstand Rabbi Yehuda. He's not concerned about a person equating or making a jump from these two separate different types of knots, because as the Rabbanan said before, Aniva Bekshira Lo Michlaf. But Rabbi Yehuda's problem is a much more fundamental one. Chadaminayu Batule Mevatel. Just one second, I lost the place here. Sorry. Where am I? Oh, I'm sorry. I gotta turn the page. That's my problem. Ela Aniva Gufa Kshirahi. Rabbi Yehuda holds that Aniva itself is a kind of a knot. It's a category of a knot. So, for example, in terms of Xeros, Rabbi Yehuda is very laid back. He's not nervous or suspicious that if we allow you to use a weaver's rope, then next week you'll use a regular rope. He's cool about that. And in fact, if you told him that you're allowed to make a bow, he would be cool about that too. He's not worried, he's not nervous that tomorrow you'll make a regular knot. But he holds that Aniv itself is a knot. It constitutes a knot.
Can I interrupt for just 20 seconds and say something?
So in the Havamina, the Gemara thought that Aniva is certainly not a knot. It doesn't qualify as a kesher. And the Gemara thought that Rabbi Yehuda's issue was a gzera, that if we allow you to tie this, which is not really a knot, you might come to something else. And that contradicts Rabbi Yehuda's basic shita, that if we tell you this is what's allowed, then you'll stick to the rules. Now the Gemara Lamaskona says, no, you misunderstood. Aniva is not a separate category. Aniva is a subcategory of kshira. It's a different kind of a kesher, but nevertheless it qualifies as a kesher, and you violate a malacha d'oraisa. So I wanted to share with you a note that I have here in the Masifta. He writes, La halacha kaimalon kechachamim, we pass like the Rabbanon, sha'aniva eino kesher, umutar. So it's really interesting because the two shitos here between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim are very extreme. You know, you would never think that, you know, we're so used to tying bows, we take it for granted because we pass like Chachamim, but who would ever believe that according to Rabbi Yehuda, one of the great Tanoim, you're violating a malacha of kosher. He says, "Afilu mi omedes l'skayim." He says, if you tie a bow, even if your intention is to leave that bow for a long period of time, he says, "Aval nechleku aposkim im mutol lasos kesher echad ume olav lasos aniva." Here's the deal. Usually, a knot is what's called kesher al gabi kesher. So you tie, you put it in, and then you put it in a second time, and it's very tight. Are you allowed to put it in once, and then tie a bow on top of the first kesher? He says, Ledasa beis Yosef, according to Rav Yosef Cairo, Osir lasos kesher kazeh imu kayoma. So if you have one kesher and then you make a bow on top of the kesher and your intention is to leave it there for a long period of time, that's prohibited. The Ramah disagrees, and he paskins that our minug, he says, is that we make an aniva, we tie a bow, even al gabi kesher acher, even if it's on top of the first knot. And the Mishnah Berurah paskins in the name of the Achronim that even the Ramah is only matir if he intends to take it apart on that day. So, for example, you know, there are people who, and I think it's quite common amongst Talmidei Chachamim actually, that they don't want to take apart their bows on a daily basis. They don't have time for that. So they tie the bow and they leave it there for who knows how long. It comes out that according to Mishnah Berurah, that could be a serious problem, because if he intends to leave that you know, he'll just slip into his shoes as if they were loafers, that, and he's going to leave that knot for a long time, so it could be that makes it into a kesher shel kayoma. He writes, "Achidushu shiraka nival gabi kesher ena nechsheves lemaisa uman lachein mutal asosim ena shel kayoma." So again, it's really true that this kind of a kesher is not a professional maisa uman. He gives an example of a kind of kesher that you leave for a certain period of time, like a lulav, he says. You know, very often you tie down the lulav, and he says that you should have to be very careful with this, because number one, you have to make sure that it's not a real professional knot, right, like the kaisha cloak, you know, those kind of things, and it's only an aniva. Number two, you have the other condition that you're not intending to leave it there for a long time. All right. So let's go on in the Gemara now. Omar Rabbi Abba, Omar Rabbi Chiyo Barashi, Omar Rav, Mevi Adam Chevel Mitoch Beso. Interesting language here, mitoch beso. It sounds like we're talking about some sort of a rope that was not being used until this point. So he brings it mitoch beso. You know, he has it somewhere stashed away. The koshro bipara ve ubievus. So what happens here? He's got an animal, let's say in this case a cow, and he wants to tie down a rope to the head of the cow, and on the other end of the rope he has something called an avus. Okay, now avus, according to the translation we have here, is mako machal habehemos. That's the place where they feed the animals.
Right.
So they want to make sure that the animal is tied down to the place where he has to eat, or she has to eat, right? So the animal will eat. And therefore, he has this rope, and he's allowed to tie it down to, on one end, again, to this receptacle where the animal is eating its food. I think in fancy English it's called a trough. I'm not sure how to pronounce that word anyway. And on the other end, it's tied down to the animal itself. Ubilvad shelo yovi chevel mitoch beso. No, I'm sorry. I think I skipped something. Yeah, I'm sorry. Anyway, so what we have here is that he brings a rope from his house, and he ties one end of it to the cow and the other end to this feeding avus, which is some sort of receptacle for the animal to eat. Now you might think that what we should be afraid of is that at some point he wants to let the cow, after it finishes eating, go free. And what he's going to do is he's going to untie the knot, and he's going to do it at the point that it's connected to the avus, right, to the that receptacle. And then at that point, he's going to leave the rope around the neck of the cow on a permanent basis, which means he's not going to bother taking apart that knot around the cow, because tomorrow, when it's time to feed the cow again, he'll just attach the rope to the avus. Or maybe the opposite might be the case. He may decide to leave the rope attached to the avus and unloosen the knot that's around the head of the neck of the cow. And what's going to happen is, by untying one of those two knots, he's going to leave the other knot as a permanent knot, either permanently attached to the receptacle or permanently attached to the neck of the cow. And this is a big chiddush that the Gemara is quoting in the name of Rabbi Abba, that you're allowed to do so. And the Gemara now is going to ask Akasha, Esve, and after Rabbi Abba made this statement, so it says, Esve Rabbi Abba, Rabbi Acha, Aricha, okay, he was called the tall one, I guess he was a tall fellow, and his name was Rabbi Acha, and he's asking Akasha on Rabbi Abba, and Dehu Rabbi Acha Bar Papa. Okay, the tall one called Rabbi Acha is the son of Papa. Le Rabbi Abba, and he asks the kasha on Rabbi Abba from a brisa. What does it say in the brisa? Chevel shebe'evus kosho b'para. The brisa has limitations here and restrictions. Under what circumstances are you permitted to tie down this rope to the avus, or alternatively to tie down the rope to the neck of the cow? He says, "Ubilvad shelo yavi chevel mitoch beso." So the Braisa says that once you have a rope, so one end of the rope is tied to the avus, and you're allowed to tie the other end of the rope to the cow, or you have a rope and one end is tied to the cow, and now you want to tie the other end to the avus, but under the following restriction, that he doesn't bring a rope from his house, the yikshar bipara ubi avus. So again, if the rope is already attached either to the receptacle or to the cow, then he can tie the other end of the rope, either to the cow or to the receptacle. However, if he takes a rope from his house and it's not tied on either side, then it's prohibited to tie down the rope both to the avus and to the neck of the cow. That's prohibited. And this is against the statement that we had before, Rabbi Abba, in the name of Rav, because he said that you took the rope from your house, mitoch beso, implying that it's not tied neither to the cow nor to the avus. He says the following in the footnote. He says, "Aval im kotze echad, ktze echad kvar haya kashur." Why does the Brice allow it if one end of the rope is tied? Then mutalik shalo is haktzei hashedi. He could tie the second one. Mishum shemistaber sheyatis hakeshes shekosher achshav. We apply the assumption that the one that he's going to take apart is the one that he just tied now. In other words, he has a permanent knot that's tied. Again, everybody's different. Some people will tie it to the cow and some to the avus. Now he's attaching the other end of the rope with a knot, and we can be very, secure or confident that it's that second knot that he's going to unloose it. So there's no problem here of a kesher shel kayama. However, in the case of Rabbi Abba, he seemed to say that we're not worried at all. We're going to assume that on both ends, it's not a kesher shel kayama. So the Gemara answers to reconcile this contradiction from the Braisa, Hossam, when the Braisa says he can't tie it from both sides, from both ends, that's a Hevel Dialma. That's your classic rope. And when you're talking about the classic rope, then it's very, very feasible that he'll tie it down and leave it there permanently. Again, if he's starting from naught, if he's starting from nowhere, and he's tying it on both ends. But Hacha, when Rabbi Abba says it's mutter, he's talking about Hevel de Gardi. So it's like Tarti Litevusa. There are two boxes that we can check off that indicate that this is not a Kesher Shel Kayama. Number one, he has no intention to leave it there. He's going to take it apart. And number two, it's also a different kind of a rope. That's a temporary kind of replacement for a classic rope. He's using the weaver's rope, and he needs it for his profession, and therefore he's going to take it apart. So when Rabbi Abba allows you to be mevi adam chevel mitoch beso v'koshro, and he's going to tie it on both ends, one end to the avos and the other end to the animal's neck, that's the case of chevel the Gardi. We have to add another word into Rabbi Abba's formulation. So if we combine those two factors, number one, that he has full intention to take apart the knot, and number two, it's a different kind of a rope. Again, even though if you remember the Chachamim of Rabbi Yehuda, they felt that you would, we have a real serious suspicion that you would confuse one rope with the other, and therefore they were absolutely opposed to using a weaver's rope. But nevertheless, if you combine that with the fact that in this case, he's not going to permanently attach the cow to the receptacle, that's ridiculous. The cow eats, and then you free the cow. So the thing is, he's going to untie this knot on both ends, and therefore Rabbi Abba allows it. The Bryce, on the other hand, is talking about a classic rope, a chevel d'alma, and therefore we don't have that extra additional factor that he'll definitely remember to take it, to untie it and replace it on within a short span of time. However, even the Braisa would agree that if you have a rope that's already tied down on one end, and it doesn't matter which end, then it's safe to assume that the second knot that he ties down is the one that's temporary, and that he's going to take it apart. But to take a rope from your box of ropes there, in the shed, and tie both ends, that's a problem, because it's very possible that one of those two knots is going to remain permanent. However, and that's where Rabbi Abba qualifies it, if you're using not a regular rope, but rather a weaver's rope, then we could be rest assured that he'll take it apart. So it's not a permanent rope. All right. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Shmuel. Okay. Now the Gemara is going to talk about these weaver's ropes in a broader sense, about tying knots on the weaver's ropes. And now we're no longer discussing the issue of kosher, but rather we're going off on a little bit of a tangent, and we're going to discuss the issue of tiltul muktza. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, Omar Shmuel, clay kivai, which are certain kinds of utensils that are used by the weavers, is mutal etaltalon b'shabbos. you're allowed to move these utensils. They're usually made of not regular wood, they're made of reeds. And even though they're dedicated to the malacha, they were designed and singled out for the malacha of Oreg, which is a malacha asura, and therefore you would have a principle called klisha malachto li'isur, like we talk about a pen or a certain kind of scissors, you know, that's used to cut paper and so forth and so on, and therefore you would say that tiltul should be asur here, but here we're going to allow it. And the reason for that is because these are not very specialized kalim that are expensive, that are different than, you know, it's more primitive, if I could use that word. It's not sophisticated. It's not a utensil that's manufactured in a very specific way through a whole process. Basically, it's just a reed, and they designate it for the purpose of helping in the loom, you know, to, like, for example, separate different threads that get tangled. But it has many other functions, and it's, you know, it's not something that you know, we have in Muktzah, for example, something called a chisaron kiss, you know, that you know, like a dentist, for example, has very expensive and sensitive utensils, right? Like he picks at your teeth with them. So, you know, those utensils are dedicated exclusively, you know, that he's going to lock it up when he's not using it. He doesn't want anybody using it for anything else. It'll dull in it, it might break it, and so forth. Here we're talking about something which is a kli that you use either for that particular malacha, but you use it for other functions. It's called a kli shemalachto le'isur ule heter. And that has the status of a kli shemalachto le'heter, and you're allowed to use it for any tashmishal heter, any use for heter. And
can I just ask you what the difference is again? I always get mixed up with this. A kli shemalachto le'isur and a kli shemalachto le'heter, right?
Right.
Can you not use both of them for permissible use or no? How do you cook?
Ah, well, here's the difference.
What's the difference?
If you want to use it for a heter use, then that's called litzorech gufo.
Okay.
And that's mutter. However, if you want to use it, if you want to move it and change its location for the protection of the object. So let's say, for example, I would have a pen, you know, or a quill, you know, let's say a quill in those days, you know, was very, you know, a scribe, like my grandchildren are learning Safras now in high school. Very nice that they teach them that. So they have certain utensils. So that's a kli shemalachto le'isur. If you needed it as a toothpick, for example, you know, to get something out of your teeth, maybe that would be mutter, because it's litzorech gufo. I mean, again, you'd have to learn the sugyas, but theoretically it could be mutter. But let's say the quill got left out in the sun, and it's beating down, so you don't want it to get ruined, and that's not litzorech gufo. That's called michama litzel, from the sun into the shade. Yeah. So that you're only allowed to do if it's a kli shemalachto le'heter. And that's what Rabbi Yehuda is telling us here, that this kind of a weaver's pick, which is kli shemalachto, not only le'iser, but also le'heter, and you're allowed to take it out of the sun for its own protection and bring it into the shade, because it's considered like a kli shemalachto le'heter. All right then, boy, me name is Rav Yehuda. So they asked the question to Rav Yehuda: if you have if we're talking already about the various utensils that are used by the weavers, then there's a kind of a beam which is called a kovet elyon, and there's another beam which is called a kovet atachton. So let me try to explain this the way I understand it, and I'm not 100% sure this is correct, but I'll do the best I can. Every weaving requires both a shasi and an orev. So the shasi are those threads that, many threads, that go, we'll call it, from down to up. And then you have a single thread, which is called the Arev thread, that's on a spindle, and you put it inside, you know, and outside, up and down each one of these threads. So that's called the Arev thread. Now, when you set up the weaving process and you stretch these shasi threads from top to bottom, bottom to top, as we said, then you have to wrap them around a kind of a small beam, one on top and one on the bottom. And that's going to keep the, you know, the threads taut, tight. Mm-hmm. And the one on top is called the Kovet HaElyon, the one on the bottom is called the Kovet HaTachton. So we're going to wrap around the threads on these two beams. Now, the question is, what's the status of these beams? Obviously, he's dedicating it for the purpose of weaving, which is a classic klisha malachto le'isur. And mahu, what's the din? Are you allowed to move them on Shabbos? Or shall we say that since these are designated exclusively, and they're pretty, you know, serious kinds of beams, normally you would not want to reassign their use. So should that be an Issur Tiltul B'Toras Klisha Malachto L'Issur? Or shall we say no, that since you could theoretically use them for some other purpose, therefore it's a Klisha Malachto L'Issur L'Heter? Because until now, we were talking about Kivai, right? Kivai were those kinds of reeds that they used, you know, they were kind of sharp to separate different threads that got tangled, and that's, you know, that's something that you could use for many different functions. But here, when we talk about the COVID, I hate to use that word in these days, COVID, but the right, the it doesn't say 19, but there's a COVID HaElyon and COVID HaTachton, and those are, you know, those are kind of like heavy beams, and you know, you would probably not want to use them for other functions.
Right.
So what was the response of Rabbi Yehuda? In v'la v'rafya biyode. That's a, you know, you could look that up in Bar Ilan, if you know, do a word search, it appears all over Shas. And what it means is that he mumbled, he didn't know, have a clear answer. And it seems like at this particular moment there's no final solution, but let's see as we go along. Okay, Itmar. So we learned the following, and maybe from this we can come to some conclusion about the status of the COVID. Omer Rav Nachman, Omer Shmuel, Kli Kivai. Those kelim that are used by the weavers, mutal etaltal and v'shavis. And then he says, "Vafilu kovet haelyon v'kovet haTachton." Even those beams that are quite heavy, you're allowed to use for another function. And again, as we said before, you could take them in from the sun into the shade. But then we finally get to the real McCoy utensils of weaving that apparently are, you know, very very unique and manufactured in a very specific way. Avalois ha'amudim. Now, usually the word amudim is translated as poles, or not pole. Yeah, I guess you'd call it a pole. You know, something pillars. Oh, that would be the word. Not poles, but we'll call them pillars. But you know, when we hear the word pillars in English, I think we generally associate it with very large pillars. Like, you know, if you go to Rome, you look at Bernini's pillars. You know, which is a you know, that's a magical engineering feat that even to this day they didn't spoil how they were able to do that. Anyway, so those are pillars. Here we're not talking about pillars. We're talking about smaller amudim, and they used They use Binol Hariga Shel Hanoshim. Okay, so he uses some fancy Hebrew words over here. And the English translation here will be a two-beam vertical peg, or maybe instead of peg, we call it a post. Mm-hmm. Now, what was the purpose in the old looms, back at the time of the Gemara, of these amudim? So the answer is that apparently these posts, if you want to call these amudim, were minukavim. Minukavim means they were perforated with holes in them. Now, what was the purpose of these kind of posts or beams that had holes in them? Okay, they were placed to support the kovet, right? We had the kovet ha'elyon and the kovet ha'tachton, but we need some sort of a small pillar, if you will, or a small post, and we need actually two of them. One would hold up the kovet ha'elyon, and one would hold up the kovet ha'tachton, and that would make sure that the kovet would not get loose. And this was used in the looms back at the time of the Talmud. Okay. And here he says that it's osur. Now, I'm trying to figure out why it's osur. And I think the Gemara is going to be perplexed about this. Amalei Ravler of Nachman, Maishna Mudim Delo. You know, before we said that the Kovet HaElyon, the Kovet HaTachton is Mutter, but not the Amudim. Why are the Amudim different than the Kovet HaElyon, etc.? Why are these Asa B'Tiltel? Elema, if you're going to tell me, Deka Ovid Gumos, that maybe if we allow him to take these posts out of the ground, because they're firmly attached to the ground, then inevitably he's going to be creating holes in the ground, right? Because what happens is you're going to shake it one way or the other in order to loosen it from the ground, and you're going to open up gumos. Gumos are holes in the ground. Now, to open up gumos on Shabbos in the ground, is that's called Meleches Choresh. And not only that, forget about Meleches Choresh. Let's say he has no intention to plant in his house, right? We always say Choresh is out in the fields, but nevertheless, he's moving the offer. You know, he loosens it around, and the offer moves from one side to the other, and that itself is a kind of an Iser Muktza. Now, in his house, if he makes holes, he might be violating Meleches Bone, but the Gemara back on Daf Ayin Gimel points out that if you're creating holes in your house, there has to be some sort of constructive purpose and some desire to create these gumos. Here, Lechora, he has no purpose for the gumos. So therefore, would this be actually Meleches Bone? And in the footnote here, he quotes the Chazon Ish, that when he's marchiv the guma, when he makes this hole a little bit larger, because he shakes around, you know, he loosens up these amudim, then that itself maybe make it easier for him to replace the posts. So the Gemara doesn't like this possibility. Why? Because gumos mimele kahavyan. In other words, he has no interest in creating holes over here. It could be that when he takes the posts out of the ground, he may inadvertently create these gumos. But it's a totally different action. He's just pulling the amudim out of the ground, and the guma, in the Gemara's language, is nases meimela. Meimela means meileha. And that's considered something that's mutter. And here all the Rishonim Peh Echad, starting from Rashi and all the way down, they all ask the question of what's called a psik resha, that a davar she'eino miskaven, if it's a psik resha, it's going to be asur. And here we have to add another element into the equation, and that would be makalkel, that he really doesn't need the wider holes in the ground in his living room or wherever she does the weaving. And furthermore, this is not a classic chofer biyadayim. He's not digging a hole with his hands. He's taking the amudim out of the ground, and kilachar yad, by, he's creating these holes. That's not called chofer. Chofer means when you take a hoe or you take a shovel and you dig in to create holes. So we're going to combine all these elements together. It's a davar she'eino miskaven. It's also a makalkel situation, plus it's kilachar yad. When we add that all together, it's going to be mutter. Disnan, and I'll prove it to you from a Mishnah in Masechta Kelayim. And the Mishnah says that Tomein Lefes Utsnonos Tachas Eitz HaGefen. So we're talking about a person who Tomein means he's sort of literally hiding or burying or something. So he's burying a Lefes. Lefes is what we take on Rosh Hashanah. I think it's called a turnip. Or a Tznon, which is a radish. My father, Lev Shalom, loved radishes. And Tachas Eitz HaGefen, and he's burying it under a grapevine. And now the problem is that he might be violating Meleches Kilayim, because when he digs into the ground and he buries these vegetables, then they are connected to the vine. And to connect vegetables with a vine is a problem of Kilayim. So the Mishnah in Kalayim says that im miktas olav megulim, eino choshesh lo mishum kalayim, v'lo mishum shviyas, v'lo mishum maaser, v'nitolim b'shabbos. So this Mishnah really covers the entire gamut over here. What's the case? What's the condition? The condition is that some of the leaves on top of the vegetables are exposed above ground, meaning that although the main part of the leek or the radish is subterranean, but nevertheless the leaves are above ground. And in that case, then eino choshesh, we're not afraid of any violation whatsoever when he buries it into the ground. And let's talk about, we'll fast forward just a moment. The last of the categories is nitolim b'shabbos. You'd be allowed to pull out the radish on Shabbos, even though by pulling out the radish, he is creating a hole that wasn't there before, right? Because he had a vegetable inside the ground, so there was no airspace in the ground. The very moment he takes the leaf and pulls out the radish, then he's creating a hole. But the answer is he's allowed to do this on Shabbos. Why? Because he only buries the leek or the radish in the ground, but it's not attached to the ground. In other words, he didn't plant it in the ground in a way what we call hashrosha, where it takes root in the ground. So he never intended to plant it, and therefore, if it's only there on a temporary basis, and we'll try to figure out why from an agricultural perspective he's doing this, maybe he's keeping it moist as opposed to dry, and in any event, it's already considered tolush. Tolush means the opposite of mechubar, it's already detached. Mm-hmm. And the Gemara is arguing here, this is Rava's argument by analogy, that if you're allowed to remove the lefes from the ground, and you're not creating a guma on Shabbos, because again, the guma is created me'eleha automatically by removing something and exposing the space, you know, the airspace that it was occupying before. If that's mutter on Shabbos, then why should it be asur to take out the amudim on Shabbos? right? These amudim that were holding up the loom, parts of the loom, when you remove them, you're worried about creating a guma, but you didn't create a guma. This whole happened automatically. So therefore, Rava argues we're going to have to come up with another explanation to justify what we learned before in the statement of Rav Nachman in the name of Shmuel, that the amudim, you're not allowed to take out of the ground. So therefore, the tam ha'isur in taking out, removing the amudim is not because you're creating a guma, but rather, we might be afraid that if we allow you to take the amudim out of the ground, you might come to fill up the hole.
Right.
And that's a whole different problem. That's called meleches bona, that if you have holes in the ground in your living room and you... Oh, what's called mashve pnei akarka, you flatten it out with a plane, that's going to be a malacha d'oraisa of bona. However, besode, if let's say, for example, the case of Lefes and Snonos, there, where did he bury his leeks and radishes? He did it out in the field. And if he did it out in the field, then we're not afraid that he is going to flatten out the ground. Lo osi lasuye gumos. And therefore, it's mutter to remove these vegetables from the ground because they weren't planted and they weren't rooted in the ground. They were there on a temporary basis. Hacha, but here in the case of the amudim and the loom, this is babayis. It's in his house. And he doesn't want to have holes in the ground of his house. So whenever you pull out something that's buried inside the ground, we're always going to be afraid of osi lashvuye gumos. He's going to come to flatten out the ground. And therefore, we're not going to allow him to remove these amudim. It's a whole different perspective on the statement of Shmuel. I just want to get up to the Mishnah, Ira, if it's okay with you.
Yeah, for sure.
And we're up to Boy Minei Rabbi Yochanan, Mi Rabbi Yehuda Bar Iloi. Kli Kivai, okay, these were the utensils that we said were used by the weavers. Kigon, for example, Kovet Elyon and Kovet Tachton, Mao Litaltalon B'Shabbos. Are you allowed to move them on Shabbos? Omer Lei, so Rabbi Yehuda responds to Rabbi Yochanan's Kasha, his question, and he says, Ein mitaltalit. We're not going to allow you to move them, against the previous statement of Shmuel. Umatam, and why can't you move them? Lefisha ein nitolim. Very strange, because they are not taken. You know, I ask you, why can't you take them? And you said, because they're not taken. That doesn't tell me much. So for this, we have to go back to Yemel Sachol. He says, Gam bi Yemel Sachol, Ein heim nitolim mimakom lemakom. In other words, when you set up your loom, then the kovet is placed in a permanent way, and you don't want to move it from place to place. And the reason for that is, as we indicated earlier, the kovet is very heavy, and therefore we don't want to move it around. So therefore, once we don't want to move it around, now it becomes prohibited. And if you would ask me, again, this is not, what I'm telling you now is not right, but I would have said the following, that in this case it becomes mukta. What do I mean by mukta? Mukta means that you're not allowed to move it around at all, even for the sake of gufo, even if you want to use it for its, you know, physical entity. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm going to tell you, Ira, this is not right, but why do I think it's right, you know, logically? Because something that's not nital, that you don't move around, and it's permanently placed in a certain location, that becomes ois kli. In other words, it's no longer kli.
Right.
The definition of a kli is something that you move around. If something is permanently affixed, and you don't move it around, that's called mukta. That's not a kli. However, I have to admit to you that that's not the way they learn pshat here.
Yeah.
They're going to learn that it's a kli shemalachto le'isur. And I'll read to you the mesifta here. The mesifta says, kevon shegam b'chol enom nitolim b'mokom b'mokom b'nei shem kvedim, because of their weight. is therefore kol malachtam hirakla riga. They are now exclusively dedicated for weaving, and therefore becomes harehem keklisha malachto leisur. Nimtza, Sherab Yehuda bar Eloi cholek al divir of Nachman shem Shmuel el shehita letaltalam b'shabbos. Okay, so we said before, in the name of Shmuel, that you are permitted to move these kovet alyon kovet atachto. Now, the final maskona here of Rabbi Yehuda bar Levi is that this is prohibited. But he says it's prohibited under the halacha of kli shemalachto le'isur. And it's exclusively dedicated for Ariga because you wouldn't want to move, even during the week, you wouldn't want to move it around. So Baruch Shekivanti, I'm looking here in the Alkut Biurim in the back, although Rashi says that Kovet Elyon, Kovet Atachton comes under the category, according to Rav Yehuda, of Kli Shemalachto Le'isur. And Rambam, in Perkav Vav, Milchus Shabbos, writes that Enom Nitolim, Mipnei Shem Tkuim, and the Magid Mishnah says that according to the Rambam, they are so heavy and they are so affixed to the ground and they don't move them. Ein aleim toras kli ulefichach ein letaltalam klal. And if you'd ask me what the Magid Mishnah has in mind, klal is even letzorach gufo. Okay, I'm looking for that statement now. See if I got it right. And he quotes here the Merkeves HaMishnah on the Rambam that the Isur Tiltul of Kovet Elyon Kovet Tachton is because of Meleches Soser. Okay, so that's a totally different take. Now, let's go back to the part of the Gemara that we skipped. And that is in the case of Lefes Utsnon, Lo Mishum Kilayim. He says that this is not called Netia, Notea. Right, you're not allowed to plant a vegetable under a tree, or in this case, under a vine, but this is not called planting. And that's therefore not a violation of Lo Tizra Karmacha Kilayim. And number two, Lo Mishum Shvius. If it's the seventh year of the Shemitah cycle, then these vegetables, since they're not rooted in the ground, they don't get Kedusha Shvius. And Lo Mishum Maser. Right? If, let's say, these vegetables were already Me'usorim, he already took off Maser, now he puts it back in the ground, it's not like he's replanting it, it's only there on a temporary Tolish basis, it's not attached to the ground, and therefore there's no additional Chiyuv of Maser. Alright, this leads us to the next Mishnah, which is the second Mishnah here on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel. Mekaplim Es HaKelim. So we're talking about Begodim, and he wants to fold them up, or he wants to unfold them, because he doesn't want them to get crumpled, and he's allowed to do this on Shabbos. So I'll read to you the translation is Imuto Lekapil Vishabis Abgodim Kishu Poshed Osom Kideshlo Yis Kamtu. So he's allowed to fold garments Afilu Arbov Chamisha Pam, even four or five times. And when he took off the garment, he would fold it up so it wouldn't get wrinkled. And the Mishnah says that you're allowed to take off your clothes on Shabbos and fold them up in order to wear them later on the same day. And even if he has to fold them five times, since he needs it on Shabbos, he's allowed to do it each time. V'chein, and furthermore, matzian es hamitos. He's allowed to make the beds and put the sheets out in order to sleep on the beds. And once again, he's not preparing for Motzi Shabbos, because he's going to enjoy the benefit of the organizing the beds. Let's say, for example, at night he might want to sleep there during the day. And that's called, in the language of the Mishnah, Milele Shabbos L'Shabbos. So we're allowed to do it on Friday night for the purpose of Shabbos by day. You're allowed to fold up your garments and set up your beds at night, Friday night, for the purpose of Deyavalo Mishabbos Lemotzi Shabbos. But to set it up on Shabbos for after Shabbos, that's already considered Achana, and we don't prepare on Shabbos for Motzi Shabbos. Okay, now in the note he points out that these are beds that are used for sleeping. Now there were couches that were used during the meal, for reclining in the meal. That's already a whole different story. And a person would usually prepare the couch after the Friday night meal in order to eat the meal Shabbos by day. Okay, now we go on to the last part of the Mishnah, which is Rabbi Yishmael. He has a little bit of an introduction to the last part of the Mishnah, which is also about folding clothing. And the Mishnah wants to know, what's the halacha of Yom Kippur when it falls on a Friday? Are you allowed to prepare for Shabbos? And also, let's say, preparing Shabbos for Yom HaKippurim, if Yom HaKippurim is on a Sunday. So basically it goes in two different directions. Either you're preparing on Yom Kippur for Shabbos, if Yom Kippur is on a Friday, or the reverse, you're preparing on Shabbos for Yom Kippur, if Yom Kippur is on a Sunday. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Mekaplim, Esakelim, Atzinas, Amitos, Miyom HaKippurim, L'Shabbos, that it's permissible, if Yom Kippur is on a Friday, to prepare the beds and the garments for Shabbos, because that's called Milan B'Kodesh, because the Shabbos has a Kedusha Chamura, so you're allowed to prepare from Yom Kippur to Shabbos. And furthermore, V'chelve Shabbos, this is in the Beis HaMikdash, you're talking about the limbs of Karbonos that were brought on Shabbos on the Mizbeach, but they haven't yet been burnt on the Mizbeach, which is called Haktara. So you did the Akrava, you didn't do the Haktara yet. Is Kravim B'Yom HaKippurim, if Yom HaKippurim is on a Sunday, you're allowed to do the Haktara of that carbon that was brought as a Akrava on Shabbos. And once again, that's because Yom Kippur has a lower level of Kedusha than Shabbos. I have a low, but now let's go in the reverse to the case where Yom HaKippurim, just one second, is Avalo Shel Yom HaKippurim B'Shabbos. So now we're talking about Yom Kippur on a Friday. And the question is, if the carbon was, the Hakrav of the carbon was on Yom Kippur, on a Friday, are you allowed to do the Haktara on Shabbos? And the answer is, says Rabbi Shmuel, that's prohibited because Shabbos has a greater and a more intense Kedusha than that of Yom HaKippurim. So therefore, if he's being makriv on Shabbos, a varim of karbonos of Yom Kippur, it's like a varim of karbonos of Chol. I mean, because relative to Shabbos, Yom Kippur is like Chol. However, Rabbi Akiva Omer, the Kedushas of Shabbos and Yom HaKippurim are equal, and therefore one cannot be overridden or trumped by the other. Lo shel Shabbos kraven b'Yom HaKippurim, lo shel Yom HaKippurim kraven b'Shabbos. So either way, you cannot do the Haktara neither from Yom Kippur to Shabbos or the other way around. And the same law is going to apply to Kippul Begadim or Hatzos HaMitos. You're not permitted to fold up your Kalim on Yom Kippur for the purpose of Shabbos, or Shabbos for the Sunday Yom Kippur. You're not allowed to be Matzi and Matzos and set up the beds from Yom Kippur to Shabbos, or vice versa. So this is where we're going to stop for today. Let's just make a note of where we got up to. We're mostly towards the bottom of Kuf Yud Gimel. We have about 10 lines left. And that's going to start with the Gemara of Omar, Amri, Debei, Rav Yane. And Amir Hashem will cover that tomorrow.